especially when one addresses Hashem in the second person. As in the phrase, blessed are you, and the like. Because when we address Hashem in the second person, as if in second person, it's even more emphasized, the oneness, the closeness, the kinship. Hashem is actually present here, and I'm addressing Him as if I'm talking to a second person standing right in front of me. Baruch atah, blessed are you, Hashem, you, right, you. This emphasizes the nature of the union, which is a consequence of this conviction of the Jew in the morning to reconnect the soul with that which it is really one. V'hine, and now, b'achon ezu shel mesiris nafshei l'Hashem, with this preparedness to surrender a soul to Hashem, Yaschil Birchas HaShachar. This is how the Jew should begin reciting the morning benedictions. Baruch Atochuli, blessed are you, and so forth. This is how the Jew should begin. And again, the Alter Rebbe is talking to the real person, to the struggling person. This is how the Jew has to begin. You wake up in the morning, Elokai Neshama. Don't be afraid of your soul. Acknowledge your truth. And for the Alter Rebbe, this is an absolute certainty that this is in our hearts. Tune into it. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared of your spiritual identity which is in you. Trust it. Believe in it. Tune into it. Rely on it. Get it. Get it. Get into it. Get into its kishka, so to speak. No. Neshama shenasata b'tahirihi, and the Jew tunes into this level of identity, and on this level of identity, his or her quintessential interest is one interest, melting away in the all-pervading oneness of Hashem. And now, with this readiness, I want to give you my soul. He should begin Baruch Ata, the beginning of the Birchas HaShachar, and then which continues into davening. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe once described the Rosh Hashanah de Kemayriv of his father, the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Shalom Bereshneis. In that year, it was Rosh Hashanah Tofresh Mem Zayin, which would mean 1886. And they were in Yalta. Previous Rebbe was a very young child. They were in Yalta for the summer months for health reasons. And there was a Polish Eklois, a shtibel of Polish, a large shul actually, of Polish Chassidim, where the Rebbe would daven. And he'd never told anybody who he was, that he's the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they did not know who he was. He was quite young, yeah. It was a few years after his father's passing, and he actually wasn't yet even he didn't accept upon himself the leadership of the Chabad movement, although he said Hasidic discourses and so forth. And for those few months, from time to time, he would give a nice donation for the shul, and particularly to the shamash of the shul, to the attendant who took care of the shul. And he would learn a lot in the shul and so forth. Now the custom of the Chabad Rabbeim Rosh Hashanah at night was that they would stay in Shul after the Minyan finished Ma'ariv, and that Ma'ariv they used to daven alone. And the Ma'ariv of Rosh Hashanah, the first night of Rosh Hashanah, usually occupied anywhere from 3 to 6 hours. Yeah. This began with the Alter Rebbe. It was at least 3 hours and sometimes more, and during that Ma'ariv, the weeping was profuse. They would weep profusely. And so the Rebbe Rashab told the Shamish or Shoshan that night that he would like to stay in Shul a little later. So the Shamish respected him. He said, no problem. There was a non-Jewish janitor. So after davening, he told the non-Jewish janitor, first of all, don't extinguish the candles, and B, when you leave, you finish cleaning, don't lock the door. So you should be able to get out. And he left him alone. and he went to eat the meal of Rosh Hashanah. In the middle of the meal, the shamash, who was a simple but pious Jew, felt guilty. He knew that the man there was a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar. He saw his behavior and how he learned and so forth. To leave Rosh Hashanah at night, a Jew, a guest who doesn't even live here, alone in Shul, he felt guilty. So he finished eating fast, he benched, and he decided to go back to Shul. This is already a few hours after Meir. He comes back to Shul, and he goes into the door, and he sees the janitor standing in the front hallway, weeping like a baby, the non-Jewish janitor. So he asks him, he says, why are you weeping? He asks him in Polish, he asks him in whatever the language is, why are you crying? He says, how can I not cry? There's a human being standing there and melting away like wax in a candle. He's melting away to his God. He says, I never see that by you guys. This is a Lebedika shul. It's a Lebedika shul. They're singing. It's a nice shul. But nobody melts away like wax on a candle. He says, when I see that, I remember all of my problems. Last year, my cow died. He says, a few months ago, my bubba passed away. My mother is also old and sick. So how can I not cry? I remember all my tzaddas. So I'm weeping. It's a very simple, peasant-like, non-Jewish janitor. The shamash, the previous Rebbe described this as a little child. The shamash, after that, walks into shul. And he was a simple yid. And right when he saw the Rebbe, Rashab, davening, the previous Rebbe described, two huge tears came, instinctively came flowing down from his eyes, and an ocean of tears just came flowing down from the shamash's eyes upon seeing this sight. So essentially, you could say all three people melted away, each one in his or her level. For him, it was his cow died. For the shamash, it was his, what was going on in his life. And for the Rebbe, it was liyachad kuchabrichu shchinte. Hashem's plan in creation has to be implemented. Rosh Hashanah at night, Hashem was being coronated, giving the world a destiny. So the Alter Rebbe says, this type of preparation must serve the prerequisite before the Baruch Atah. The first Baruch Atah in the morning, when the Jew says, Baruch Atah, blessed are you. It's not just, you wake up in the morning, Baruch Atah, blessed are you. Yeshekayach God, you did a nice job. I hope you'll do it tomorrow as well. If you even think of that, right? Usually during Baruch Atah, we have a lot of more important things to do. But the Baruch Atah comes after a serious meditation, where the Jew reconnects with the inner self, and the inner self has a boundless, intimate oneness with Hashem that is deeper than physical life, and that at the moment of truth, the Jew is ready to die for. And then he says, Baruch Atah, now I want to give you my soul. And the Alter Rebbe says, V'chein ba'achana zu. Similarly, with this preparation, yaschil lilmud shir kavua miyad achir atfila. A lot of homework today. With this preparation, one should also begin his regular shir right after davening. Davening is finished. He says, now, a yid after davening, before you go to work, you have a shir. It says in Shulchan Aruch, based on the Erechayim Simen Kufnun Hey, I think based on the Gemara and Brachas Amach Dalud, Mebeis HaKnesses, Lebeis HaMedrash, before you go work, a Yid has to have a shir to learn. So he says, before you begin the shir of learning, it should be with this preparation, with this awareness, with this conviction, that I want to allow my soul to melt away like wax in the all-pervading oneness of Hashem. L'yachad abach duscha, as he said before, to unite it with your oneness. homework is not over. V'chein be'emtza hayoyim, the same in middle of the day. If this is life, so it's life. So it's always. V'chein be'emtza hayoyim, similarly in middle of the day. Koydim she'yaschil l'lmud, before the Jew begins learning. Tzricha achana zula pachas. Such preparation at least is necessary. At least this preparation. You want to know what's the lapachis? This is not what you want to know. Why is lapachis? You'll see in a moment what's the lapachis. As if this is a compromise of what's really what he really wants. At least this. So the Alter Rebbe says, "Kenoidas is knowing." That the essential preparation and intent of lishma, learning Torah for its own sake, where it is indispensable, who betchilas halimut, is at the beginning of the learning. Bebeinanim, in the case of beinanim. In other words, by the beinanim versus the tzaddik, this intent of lishma, learning Torah for its own sake, which means not for any ulterior motive, but because I want to connect with Hashem and give my soul to Hashem. For the Beinoni, this lishma ought to be not more than in the beginning, before he begins to learn. Afterwards, the Beinoni has to think about what he's learning. If he thinks about his soul, it's a beautiful thing to think about your soul. But if you think about your soul, you'll never be able to understand the Mishnah in Ksuvas Daf Tezayin Amid Beis, that if a Jew comes over to his friend and says, this field was your father's, but I bought it from your father. And the other Jew says, no, you're a liar, you're a crook, you never bought it from your father. So if there's no witnesses that it belonged to your father, I'm believed, because HaPesha Asra, HaPesha Itir. Now, if you're thinking about your soul, you won't be able to think about a crook and to decide who's right and who's wrong. Right? So you have to think about a field and about a father and about witness, if there are witnesses, there are no witnesses, and so on and so forth, whatever you're learning. The Baal Shem Tov once put it in a very interesting way. The Gemara says, Brachis Lamed Aleph, Amed Aleph, Al Yipatir Adam Echaveri, Elam Meteich Dvar Alach, Eshem Meteich Kach Zechreyu. You shouldn't part ways from your friend only after uttering a halacha, because through that you'll remember him. Chaveire, metaphorically, is always referred to as Hashem. Hashem is the best friend of the Jew. Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, Laman Aleph, I think, Re'acha v'Re'ya Avicha Altazav, he calls Hashem your friend. Zog de Baal Shem, Ayipatir Adam Mechaveire. A Jew is never allowed to say goodbye to Hashem. He's always one with him. Only one condition, one way. Mitech Dvar Halacha. When you're going to sit down to learn Torah, then you put the mechaveda. You have to say goodbye from your transcendental spiritual consciousness. You know why shemitech kach zechneyu, because that's how you're really going to be connected. Even more than through your spiritual meditation, through the real Torah, that's how you'll really remember him. Because Torah is a reflection of Hashem's intimacy. Now the tzaddik doesn't have a problem. The tzaddik doesn't have this problem. Because by the tzaddik, love to Hashem is a natural condition. So he could be thinking about a man who says that this field belongs to him, but his heart loves Hashem at the moment. Just like when I'm learning Gemara, I don't have to evoke within myself a love to dinner that's going to be served later. It's intrinsic to me. By the tzaddik, the divine soul pervades his inner consciousness. So that's natural. He doesn't have to think about the inner spirituality. But the beinoni, the kavana is needed, but tchila salim, in the beginning of learning. Let's finish here a few lines.
Would you say that there are born tzaddiks? You know what I'm saying?
There are no born tzaddiks. Alter Rebbe discussed earlier in Tanya, there are potential. There are people that are born that have the potential to become tzaddikim. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but that's a separate discussion. Ukamai, yeah. Yeah. Do you have an answer to the question? It's a good question you're asking. The Alter Rebbe, when you think about the Va'ata Asad Litlum Emena, you're thinking about death, and that ought to lead, that can lead into a depression. Right after that you say, Va'ata Asad Lachzir Al-Asad Lava. You're going to take it away and you're going to bring it back. So maybe that's comforting, but I guess it depends how one views death. That's the real question. But this is a real, real issue. I basically spent today, Sunday, all day on a plane, most of the day on a plane, trying to get from Florida to LaGuardia Airport. And because of the blessed weather here in New York, the winds and the rains up there were very, very powerful. And our plane experienced some very heavy aliyahs and yiridahs, ascents and descents. In a very, very heavy, powerful way. I mean, the shoutings of the passengers was very loud. And I was preparing this chapter in Tanya. And I was learning this piece about a Lakai Neshama, that the Jew every morning in a very serene fashion ought to contemplate the truth. That my inner identity was yours, was one with you, it's going to be one with you. And now I also want it to be one with you. And at that moment, the plane gave a drop. And everybody began shouting. People thought, you know what you think then. And I also got terrified. But it was interesting that for like 2 seconds, even within the drop, I experienced a certain serenity. Like, be cool with what's happening. Your soul was one. Your soul will be one. And it can be one now also. And right after that, I was terrified again. Don't worry about it. But the second drop. But I thought that this must be the level of consciousness that the Alter Rebbe is introducing. But it's a heavy way to live. I mean, there's no question about it. It's very mature. It's deep. It requires the ability to view physicality from an aloof perspective, including physical terror, physical pain, and so forth. The fact is that Jews did this. Sadly, sad is that they had to do it, but for thousands of years, that's how they responded to it. Death, issues of death, even torture. Savage suffering that Jews experienced. Let's just finish a few lines here. It's late already. Okay, beget v'sefer Torah. Just as in the case of a writing, a get, a bill of divorce, or a Torah scroll, shetzurichim l'shma la'akev, where l'shma, writing them for their own sake, is an indispensable requirement. Everybody knows that a bill of divorce and a Sefer Torah have to be written l'shma, for its own sake. The halacha states in Evan HaEzer Kuflam and Aleph, in the laws of divorce, a divorce has to be written for the sake of the man, the woman who are getting divorced, for the sake of the divorce. If not, it's invalid. The same is true with a Sefer Torah. Torah scroll, the scribe must write with the intention that he's writing this for the sanctity of a Sefer Torah, and if not, it's invalid. Nonetheless, it is sufficient if at the commencement of the writing, the scribe says, I am now about to write it for the sacred, for the sake of the sanctity of a Sefer Torah, or in the case of a bill of divorce, the scribe at the commencement of writing the bill of divorce must say, Lishmai v'lishmachuli, I'm writing it for him and for her, and so on. Apparently the so on is l'shem geirushin, for the sake of divorce. So similarly, it is sufficient for a beinoni to have the intention of learning Torah or davening for its own sake at the beginning of the learning, just as we find it in the get and in the Sefer Torah experience. The It's interesting, the Rebbe's father, Reb Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, Lekuti Levi Yitzchak Antanya, writes, why does the Alter Rebbe cite two examples from a bill of divorce and a Sefer Torah? So he says that when a Beinoni, the ordinary Jew, learns Torah, he accomplishes two things. The first thing he's doing is he's giving a divorce. And the second thing he's doing, he's writing a Sefer Torah. The Gemara says in Kedushin, I think the Flamed, Impaga Becham, Nuvel Zem, Ashcheilu Beis HaMedrash. If this repulsive creature, the unhealthy inclination, encounters you, schlep into the Beis Medrash, start learning, what is him, Evan, who Nemayach, and Barzalum, Espeitzitz, if he's like stone, he'll melt, if he's like iron, he'll explode. But in any case, that's the first thing you accomplish through learning. You get rid of your destructive partner, which is what a divorce is. In this case, it's a positive divorce. Usually it's a tragic event, but in this case, that's A. The second thing the Beinoni does, he writes a Sefer Torah. He brings in holiness to his life. And before learning Torah, he has to have the Lishma, at least in the beginning, just like in the Get and the Sefer Torah, you need the Lishma in the beginning. And Alter Rebbe concludes this last piece. And when the Jew studies for many consecutive hours, yesh leila his boinin ba'achana zuhanal b'chol shah v'shah kalponim, he should reflect on the above mentioned experience at least every single hour. If he's learning for a few hours, he said, in the middle of the day before you start learning, you should think about this above mentioned conviction. So he says, if you're learning for a few consecutive hours, every hour the Jew should reflect on his spiritual essence and his willingness to give up his soul and unite it and make it one with Hashem, and then continue learning. Why each hour? Ki b'chol shah v'shah, because every hour, there is a different flow from the higher worlds to animate the lower worlds. While the flow of vitality of the previous hour returns to its source, and he adds in parentheses, in accordance with the esoteric principle of ascending and returning, mentioned in Sefer Yetzirah in the Book of Creation, one of the most ancient Kabbalistic texts. In chapter 1, this doctrine is mentioned. So the Alter Rebbe says, in this process of Ratzi Veshuv, ascending and returning, each hour there is a changing of the celestial guards. Each hour there is a changing of the guards. The flow of vitality, of divine vitality that came down from the higher worlds to animate us in the lower worlds, ascends back to its source, and it's replaced with a new flow of vitality. And this process is called Ratzi Veshuv. One set of energy, so to speak, ascends, and a new one returns to replace it down here. But the Alter Rebbe adds, the life force that ascends at the completion of every hour doesn't go back as it came in. It came in begapoy. It came in alone. It goes back in kol ha-teiru ma'isim tovim shalatachtoinim. With all the Torah and good deeds of those who dwell here below, it takes all the Torah, all the positive energy that was experienced in this world during that hour, and takes it back and goes back with it. So when 1 hour finishes, the Torah I learned that hour goes up together with the energy of the higher worlds that imbued us during that hour. Or in a more simple term, what does it mean the Torah goes up? Its spirituality is unleashed at the conclusion of every hour. And now when the new hour begins, the Torah that I'm beginning to learn now needs new wings. It needs new spirituality. So I have to evoke within myself the same kavanah of my own spiritual essence. Torah and mitzvahs need wings so that their spirituality should be unleashed. That's what it means. They ascend to the higher worlds, as discussed in the earlier chapters. Now every hour, that ascent occurs. So now when you continue learning Torah, the new Torah requires new wings, so to speak, and that's why the Kavanah has to be reiterated at every hour. And Alter Rebbe, let's learn these two lines. What does it mean that one vitality ascends and a new flow descends? Ki b'chol shah, because every hour, shayl tziruf echad miyid beis tziruf v'shem Hashem Baruch. Every hour, the rules, one of the combinations from the 12 combinations of the name of Havayim, sorry, Shem Havayim Baruch of the four letters Yudke Vovke, but Yud Beis Shoyis Hayom during the 12 hours of the day. Vitzirufi Shem Adne Balayla, while the permutations of the four letters Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, they rule at night. Kenoida, as is known. You're asking a good shaila. So let's conclude with this point. The Sefer Yetzira says, the Sefer Yetzira is mentioned there, I believe the first time in Tanya. Sefer Yetzira, as you know, is considered the most, or one of the most ancient Kabbalistic texts. The longest version of Sefer Yetzira has 2,500 words, not more. It's a short book. The shorter versions have 1,300 words. Among scholars, there's even an opinion that the original version had no more than 240 words. The author of Sefer Yetzirah is disputed. Among most of the early commentators, it is held that the author was none other than the first Jew, Avraham Avinu. Such texts like the Zohar and Raziel, ancient Kabbalistic texts, write that Avraham Avinu authored it. Reb Saadi Gaon from the 10th century, who wrote a commentary on Sefer Yetzirah, also writes that Avraham Avinu authored it. Most early commentators agree that Avraham Avinu authored it. Reb Saadi Gaon writes, it doesn't mean necessarily that Avraham Avinu wrote it down. It's possible that Avraham Avinu taught or expounded on the ideas of Sefer Yetzirah and it was transcribed later. The Gemara mentions Sefer Yetzirah several times. Sanhedrin Samachezak, the Gemara, that Reb Hoshea and Reb Chanina every Friday before Shabbos used to learn Sefer Yetzirah. Yerushalmi Sanhedrin, this is Gemara Bavli Sanhedrin. Yerushalmi Sanhedrin, Perek Zayin Alach Yud Gimel, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya talks about Sefer Yetzirah. However, there are others who believe that Rabbi Akiva wrote it. Among them, the Pardes, Rabbi Moshe Kardaviro, the Shalshalas HaKabbalah, they say that Rabbi Akiva wrote it. In the first chapter of Sefer Yetzirah, he mentions the doctrine of Ratzoy V'Shoyv, of ascending and retreating. Later in Sefer Yetzirah, that's what Alter Rebbe mentioned in the parentheses. Later in Sefer Yetzirah, in chapter 4, Sefer Yetzirah says, and I quote, Shtei avonim boinais shnei batim, shalosh avonim boinais shisha batim, arba avonim boinais arba v'esrim batim. Two stones build two houses, three stones build six houses, four stones build 24 houses. The Sefer Yetzirah continues, five stones build 120 houses. Six stones build 620 houses. Seven stones build 5,040 houses. And the Sefer Yetzirah says, from here on, go out and calculate that which the mouth cannot speak. Veina ozen yecholah lishmoy, and the ear cannot hear. Now what this means is, a letter in Kabbalah and Chassidus is defined as an even, a stone, a rock. A word, which is made up of letters, is defined as a home, which is made up of many stones. Now this is the meaning. Two stones can build two homes. Two letters can become two distinct words. You can experience two combinations, So Aleph Beis can be Aleph Beis or Beis Aleph. Two homes. With three stones you can build not three houses, but six houses. Aleph Beis Gimel can be Aleph Beis Gimel, Aleph, Gimel, Beis.
Primes.
Huh?
2 prime, 3 prime, 4 prime, 5 prime.
Yeah. 2 prime, 3 prime. The same is true with Beis and with Gimel and so forth. You can build 6 homes. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Aleph, Gimel, Beis, and the same thing you can do with the Beis, and the same thing you can do with the Gimel. So it's 2, 2, 2 is 6. Four letters can become 24 stones, can become 24 homes. And you realize how. Take the Aleph. Each one, you can do six. With each letter, you can do 6 combinations. You can do Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Aleph, Gimel, Beis, Dalet, Aleph, Dalet, Beis, Gimel, Aleph, Beis, Dalet, Gimel, Aleph, Gimel, Dalet, Beis, Aleph, Dalet, Gimel, Beis. So with the Aleph, you did the Aleph in 6, with the first letter being the Aleph, you did 6 different orders, and you can do that with the Beis and with the Gimel and with the Dalet, so you make 24. 4 times 6, so you make it into 24. And then it goes up, it accelerates, and it accelerates, and it accelerates. In Rabbi Arya Kaplan's English translation of Sefer Yetzirah, he eliminated our bother of figuring out that which the Sefer Yetzirah said, that the mouth cannot speak and the ear cannot hear. For example, 9 letters becomes 362,880 homes. Okay, 10 letters is already 3,628,800 homes. 13 letters is 6 billion. 6,227,020,800 homes, and so forth. When you have all of the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, you know how many permutations you can do? About a sextillion. Which means not a million, not a billion, not a trillion, not a zillion, not a quadrillion. Sextillion possible permutations can be done. And he brings something very interesting based on Kabbalistic texts.
Can we talk about Kaplan?
Yeah. It says in Medrash and in Zohar that each star has a name. Each star. The Gemara in Brachos Lamed Beis Amid Beis tells us how many stars there are. Now it's interesting that according to modern astronomy, the number the Gemara gives on how many stars there are approximately the number of stars that are observable in the universe. And that is approximately a sextillion. Because, as he writes, the universe contains around 100 billion galaxies. Each galaxy with approximately 10 billion stars. And that approximates the figure in the Gemara there. You can see how the Gemara does it in a very interesting way. Which means that from the permutations of the Aleph Beis, you have a name for each star. From the Tzirufim, this is called the Chachmas HaTziruf. From the combination, the permutations of the 22 letters, you have basically sextillion words, sextillion names, which you'll have a name for each star, which a name is its divine energy, as explained in the second section of Tanya. Every creature must have divine energy. Divine energy is transmitted through the letters of the Aleph Beis. But there are so many creatures. If each star has a separate name, where do you get so many letters? But with the permutations, you have more than around sextillion, which is extraordinary. You have to have stars that are observable in the universe. Again, 100 billion galaxies, and in each one there's approximately 10 billion stars. So you have 100 billion times 10 billion. You have to realize what we're dealing with. Now, what's relevant to here is 4 letters. Not 22 letters. 4 letters. Okay? So, 4 letters make how many homes? 24. The Alter Rebbe said 12. It's interesting. When it comes to Yud Kei Vav Kei, he says Yud Beis. The 12 combinations of Yud Kei Vav Kei rule the 12 hours of the day. When it comes to Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, he doesn't say 12. He just says the combinations of Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud rule the night. Apparently, one can explain this literally. Yud Kei Vav Kei has within it two of the same letters. You have two A's. The Pardes, Reb Moshe Kardaviru, has a whole portal called Shar Hatziruf, where he explains this Sefer Yetzirah, Shar, the portal of permutations. And there he says that whenever a word in Hebrew has two of identical letters, you have to cut the number of the homes it can build. So if a word with four letters has two, a word consisting of four letters has two identical letters, from 24 it has to become 12. Because two letters are identical. So with two of them you can only do the same type of permutations. So you have to cut it in half, so 24 becomes 12. Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud has distinct letters, so it's 24. Which would mean, in other words, that Yutke Vovke you could make from a 12 combinations, and each hour has one of them. So the energy of each hour is from another combination that comes out of the letters Yutke Vovke. At night, we would have to say that 12 of the combinations of Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud rule the hours of the night. Just to give, apparently, 12 out of the 24. Or you're going to say that all of the 24 rule somehow the 12 hours of the night. The Rebbe wrote in a letter to somebody yet in the 30s. His name was Rabbi Cheskel Fagan. I mentioned him last, one of the big Chacha Fagan. He wrote in a letter to him that this is very nice. The only problem is that indeed in Kabbalah it says a lot of times that Yud Kei Vav Kei has only 12 permutations and Aleph Dalet Nun Yud has 24. The problem is that according to many Kabbalists, Yud Kei Vav Kei also has 24 permutations. Because the two hay signify two distinct spiritual levels. In Kabbalistic terminology, the first hay is Bina, the second hay is Malchus. Even in Kabbalah it says some places that the first hay is written differently. The left leg of the hay has a little line that comes out. The first hay in Yud Kei Vav Kei, which would mean that it has 24 permutations. Because what's important here is the spiritual energy. And in the spiritual energy, the first hay is not the second hay. So you could make one permutation with the first hay in the beginning and another permutation with the second hay. Don't forget these combinations are just not, it's not just technical math. It's called the factorial N, whatever it's called. These are spiritual energies. When a permutation is created in a word, the energy changes. And that's why every hour has a different type of energy. So the Rebbe says an interesting idea, that it's possible, there's no proof from this piece of Tanya that Alter Rebbe holds that Yud Kei Vav Kei has only 12 permutations. The Alter Rebbe never says that Yud Kei Vav Kei has only 12 permutations. It's possible. What he means is that 12 of the 24 combinations of Yud Kei Vav Kei rule the 12 hours of the night. Just like you say by Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, that 12 of it rule the night. So 12 of Yud Kei Vav Kei rule the day. But there could be there are other 12 that are disconnected to the hours of the day and of the night. For example, we have in the Mishnah's Chassidim, Rabbi Amnuel Chai Riki, he mentions earlier in this chapter, in the footnote, Rabbi Amnuel Chai Riki writes that on Tfilin Shal Yad, there are 12... when you sew together the batim, there are 12 stitches. Check out your tefillin and you'll see 12 tefirois, 12 stitches to sew up the batim. He says in tefillin shel yad, they correspond to the 12 permutations of Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. And in tefillin shel rosh, they correspond to the 12 permutations of Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei. So there is that concept of creating the differentiation. But in any case, what is relevant to us is that when an hour ceases to exist, one combination of Shem Havaya presenting a certain energy returns, ascends back to its source, and a new energy comes down. So when this new energy comes down, the Jew has to re-evoke within himself the spiritual transcendental awareness that I want to surrender my soul to Hashem. Let me conclude with this story. When the Alter Rebbe was imprisoned, which as mentioned, these days we celebrate his liberation from prison, they tested him in very, very difficult ways to determine his loyalty and his humanness and to see his wisdom and so forth. And one of the things they decided to do is try to confuse his schedule. There was no light allowed into his room, not even the smallest of windows. It was just a candle. They would allow a candle to burn there constantly. And for days they left him without a remnant, without the smallest trace or even ray or glimmer of light. And once one of the guards who was examining him and scrutinizing him comes into him, and it was midday. It was a few hours after midday. And he tells the Alter, it was actually around 5 after 2 p.m. And he tells the Alter Rebbe, it's late after midnight. Why aren't you sleeping? Why are you up now? The Alter Rebbe said, it's not late after midnight. It's 5 minutes after 2 p.m. What? How do you know? So the Alter Rebbe says, just a little while ago, one tziruf, one combination of the energy of Yudke Vovke left this world, and a new one entered into this world. Have a good night, a good Yom Tov, and a wonderful week.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is chassidus.com.